Morning, so April is back for a return with paper 19.
Am I on, Wayne?
No, you're sitting too far down. Yeah, okay.
Agenda paper 19 deals with a request that you received for clarification about IFRS 10 relating to protective rights and the effect of those rights on power over the investee. The submitter asked whether the control assessment should be reassessed if protective rights become exercisable, for example, on the breach of a covenant in a borrowing arrangement, or whether protective rights can never affect an assessment of control. The purpose of this paper is to set out the proposed wording for the tentative agenda decision, reflecting your observations when this topic was discussed in March. The wording proposed is in paragraph 11, and that notes that you observe that paragraph 8 of IFRS 10 requires an investor to reassess whether it controls an investee if the facts and circumstances change, and also observed your comment that if the breach resulted in the protective rights becoming exercisable, that would constitute such a change. You also noted in your discussions in March that the standard does not include an exemption for protective rights from the need for a reassessment. And finally, in March, you also discussed the ISB's redeliberation of this topic when they were developing IFRS 10 and concluded that the ISB's intention was that protective rights should be included in a reassessment of control when those facts and circumstances change. This standard only became effective on the 1st of January this year, and therefore it hasn't been through a reporting cycle yet, but you concluded that the need for reassessment is a key principle of IFRS 10, and so you didn't expect significant diversity in practice to develop following the implementation of the standard. Now, those points are made in the proposed wording in paragraph 11. Do you have any further comments on the wording?
Comments or questions for April? Guido and Laurence?
I guess it's more a question. It might also be a comment, though. It seems that in the wording we are saying that I'm referring to the first paragraph where it says the control assessment should be reassessed if protective rights become exercisable. I think what we are saying here is those are actually not protective rights, because if they are protective rights, they would not influence control. I think I made the same comment at the last meeting where I said that you may have protective rights that are exercisable or not exercisable. I think the issue here is not that you had protective rights that were not exercisable. Now they become exercisable because of the breach in the contract, and now we have to look at them. I mean, protective rights are then still protective rights. They would not influence control. My understanding was that we had substantive rights that were not exercisable. Now they become exercisable, and now we have to reassess, and control may switch to the bank, I think it was in the submission. So the way it is written now seems to be, okay, they become exercisable now, and they are still protective, but that wouldn't change the assessment of control. Maybe I'm wrong, or maybe I'm confused. But
I thought the conversations in March, we weren't going into whether or not there had been a change in power, or that we were just making the point, I thought, that to the extent that one aspect of the three components of control changes, and something changes relating to the rights that control power, you would have to reassess that. I don't think we were planning to come to a conclusion about whether or not they were protective or substantive after the breach, simply just making the point that if the facts and circumstances change, then you reassess. And just confirming that that was necessary.
I agree with you. But the way I read it now, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. When you have protective rights, whether they're exercisable or not, I don't really care.
So we could just say something like, if the nature of the rights change or if the circumstances change.
I don't think we need the adjective. I think that's what Guido
could say that. But my understanding was, maybe I'm wrong, that the fact pattern actually was that the rights are not protective. Because if I recollect the fact pattern correctly, it was that they were not exercisable, the rights of the bank, I think, in this situation. They were not exercisable, so they could not influence control. After breach in the contract, they became exercisable, and now we have to reassess and the bank might control. So I was of the view that at the end of the day, those were not protective rights.
I think, consistent with April's comment, my recollection is we decided we didn't actually know the difference and it didn't matter. If a right is exercisable at one point and not at other points, it influences your control assessment when it's exercisable. Is that what, I think that's what you're
saying. It has to be exercisable to be part of the assessment, obviously. But the only problem that I have is as long as those rights are protective, it doesn't really matter. It wouldn't change my assessment of control.
Although I think protective rights are designed at inception to protect you against either misfeasance or default. If you then, it's a conditional right, and if you then breach whatever that protective clause was,
then they become
active and they become exercisable at that stage. Otherwise,
that's because your rights change when that happens. I had a comment similar to Guido's. I was going to phrase it a little bit different. That the write-up draft agenda notice seems to presume that protective rights are rights that are not currently exercisable, but that's not the case. Rights that are currently exercisable can still be protected. You have a right to stop the company from selling all of its assets. That is a current exercisable right. It is also protective. So the distinction between exercisable, non-exercisable is different than the distinction between protective and other than protective. And I think the point we're making is that if you do an assessment initially and you deem a certain right protective, okay, then it doesn't affect things. If circumstances change, you reassess all the rights, including the thing you used to think was protective, to see if you still think it is.
Okay. But that just one, because the light is, that would mean then that in the, because the rights in the fact pattern didn't change. It was from the beginning, it were the same rights. They were not exercisable at the beginning because there was no breach in contract.
Right.
So I think that's exactly the issue here. What we are saying then is rights are protective because they are not exercisable.
They can be. Yeah.
I'm not of this view, but maybe the standard is not clear, but maybe we should say that then. So they were protective at the beginning because they were not exercisable after breach of the contract.
I think they...
New game.
I think the wording in the standard is that they were protective to begin with because they weren't substantive at that present time.
Mm-hmm. Because they were not exercisable.
Because I think the standard does give an example of a protective right which is protective and exercisable at the same time.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I think, is it the adjective protective which we want? Or do we want somehow, rather than using the term exercisable, to say that the nature of it has changed in some way?
I think the nature has changed.
I think what you are saying is that the rights were protective at the beginning because they were not exercisable, i.e. substantive. As soon as they become exercisable, they are not protective anymore.
Alan, this is your baby.
Alan
wants to come in on this.
You could be careful with the word substantive, because you can have protective rights that are substantive because they give you protection. But then you can have rights that collectively give you the ability to control or direct things. So I think you've got to be very cautious with the language in here. I think this is a fairly clear case of when you're assessing them, they may have only been protective in nature when, in a particular set of circumstances. You're required to monitor continuously. Those circumstances have changed, And now those very same rights have actually given you the ability to take control, for example.
Alan, would it be offensive to you, since this is your child, if we didn't have the adjective in our agenda decision? So if we just said, the submitter asked whether the control assessment should be reassessed if the rights become exercisable. So we don't say protective rights. If we just say the right becomes exercisable, you're happy with that?
I think so.
Okay. The problem is that was not a submission, because the submitter actually asked, if it's protective at the beginning, is it always protective?
Well, I understand that, but I'm trying to... We found ourselves last time struggling over trying to define particular adjectives, and I'm asking whether that's necessary.
I think so, because that was the submission. So I would leave protective in the first paragraph, but in the next paragraph, where things change, I would take the protective order.
Okay, that's fine, too. Okay. I'm just going to go around the room. John?
I think the question that was asked from recollection is whether protective...
Joanna, I'll get back to you. Excuse me.
...is whether protective rights are sort of permanently excluded from an assessment of control. I think the agenda rejection needs... To my mind, just needs to say protective rights are not permanently excluded from an assessment of control. If circumstances change, they are reassessed as to whether they are protective rights or some other form of rights. I mean, that's loose language. But I think this idea of exercisable and protective, I think is, I mean, protective rights, as Scott said, can be currently exercisable, or there may be rights which actually give you certain powers in the future upon the occurrence of some event. So I think to mix up the notion of exercisable and non-exercisable with protective and substantive is actually mixing up two different concepts within the standard.
Bert?
I agree with what's been said. I think should make clear that as long as they are not exercisable, they are protective rights. And as soon as they are exercisable, you need to assess whether they are still protective, because they don't give you control, or if they become a part of the control that you suddenly can exercise over the company. So they are not protective rights. Maybe they are not protective rights any longer as soon as they become exercisable. And that we need to make clear, because as soon as I can exercise the right, it's not protective anymore.
Do we want to define protective rights as non-exercisable rights, or do we just want to say the control assessment should be reassessed if facts and circumstances change, for example, on breach?
A question I would ask first is, are these defined by the standard as protective rights? So far, non-exercisable covenants are not in itself defined as protective rights. So
just because it's non-exercisable doesn't make it protective, and not all protective rights are non-exercisable.
There's no relationship between exercisable and protective. Mm-hmm. And there's no relationship, direct relationship between substantive
but if it's not exercisable, can it be a protective right?
Well, if it's exercisable tomorrow, it's probably not a protective right.
Yes, but if it's not exercisable at the moment, can it be a protective right?
Yeah. Well, I think Scott used...
Not exercisable, sure, it can be protective.
Scott used the example of, you know, you have the right to prevent the company from selling all its assets.
Right, that's a exercisable right.
That's a protective right.
There's an example of a non-exercisable protective right, which is the right of a lender to seize the assets of a borrower if the borrower fails to meet loan repayment.
Okay, so the standard...
So that's non-exercisable, and it's protective. However, I believe that's one where if the borrower failed to meet the conditions and the right became active, it would no longer be protective.
Right.
It would at that point become a
right
substantive, participating, whatever... Yeah. Whatever else you want
so
to call
it. So the standard explicitly says that protective rights can be...
Exercisable or non-exercisable.
Or non-exercisable.
Yeah.
Which is odd, because I'd rather say it should be always exercisable. Otherwise there wouldn't be a right at all.
Right, the definition of protective...
Yeah,
the definition of protective right just focuses... Sorry. definition of protective right focuses on power and decision making versus just protecting your investment.
Yeah. Laurence?
Yeah, picking up on similar concerns, the sentences that create my concerns are the second and the third sentence in the second paragraph. When you say it noted that the standard does not include an exemption from protective rights from this need for reassessment. And the second one, the interpretation committee also discussed the ASB's regulation and concluded that the ASB's intention was that protective rights should be included in a reassessment of control when facts and circumstances changes. It's not protective rights. I think that what we have all said so far is you, here we have a given assumption that the rights have been considered protective. That's a given assumption. That's the fact pattern that we have. So the question is, having this assumption, do you forget about any reassessment if the rights become exercisable? And the answer is no. So basically what we are saying is that regardless from the fact that those rights are protective, if they become exercisable, there is a change in facts and circumstances that triggers a reassessment of control and reassessment of the rights, whatever they are.
Okay.
And those protective rights may continue to be protective or may not continue to be protective.
Charlotte, then I'm going to call on Joanna, and then I'm going to make a proposal.
I suppose what Lauren's saying is what I would read that paragraph is saying. It's saying you just include any rights that are there in your reassessment. It doesn't matter if they become exercisable, change for exercise. It could be other facts and circumstances surrounding the entity which may change the nature of those, which may mean you look at them and say, actually, that doesn't feel protective in nature anymore. It feels like it's giving me more of a participating right, maybe because the business has changed. And I think that's all that is saying. I do disagree. I think the first bit, protective rights becoming exercisable, I agree with what Guido said, that it implies that that's the only key factor, protective rights, is exercisability or not, when you do have ones which are current and just always protective and there's no actual exercise trigger. But I think the second paragraph reads, it's fine, it just says always reassess.
Joanna?
Yes, I agree with Charlotte. I think we're getting too bogged down as to what we mean by protective. The question was asked if those protective rights become exercisable. So that was the key question. The message we are trying to get across to me, from my perspective, is that, yes, you do have to reassess those. And that was basically the question. Whether they're exercisable or substantive or they change or whatever it is, they have to be they are part of reconsidering under paragraph 8. And I just wonder whether to get over the concern that we have is that we actually, in the middle of that first sentence or whatever it is in the second paragraph, where we said resulted in the protective rights becoming exercisable as described in the submission that did constitute such a change. So that effectively we are relating it back to that specific thing, because I don't think any of us are, you know, that's what they're saying, but I think we've got to be careful that we're not getting too bogged down by what we mean by protective rights. The key is they've got to be reassessed along with everything else in accordance with paragraph 10.
Let me try this. There are, and I'm sort of doing drafting on the fly, there are two types of rights. There are those that you look at them and say, no matter what happens, this isn't going to change my assessment of control. It may protect my investment, it may do something else, but there is no combination of circumstances in which this would change my assessment. There are other rights that don't change my assessment today, but they might change my assessment in the future. The submitter says, of that second population, is it permissible to make your initial assessment and then never reassess? We're saying for that category, the answer is no. you have to always reassess. It's a continuous process, and so you have to look at that second population every single time. And I thought that was the sense of our decision last time. Now, I understand the comments from people that the language of the agenda decision maybe doesn't communicate that. And so we might want to rework that. And I'll open it up for comments on whether we can do that offline. But Andrew, you wanted to come in?
Well, I think what I hear around the table is what we're saying is when protective rights, which are currently non-exercisable, become exercisable, you have to reassess the consolidation decisions. That's what I'm hearing.
Michael?
I'd say that when there are changes in facts and circumstances, then it's appropriate to reassess all rights in considering whether
maybe
the order of consolidation decision has changed. Indeed.
Yeah. Bernd?
That's what I wanted to say. I don't think that we have two buckets here, as you described it. I think no matter what the right is, as soon as it changes its nature, the effects and circumstances, you have to reassess. There is no right that you never look at in the future, even though it's protective now. As soon as it changes, as long as it doesn't change, there's no need to look at it. But as soon as it changes, you have to look at it. So there are no two buckets. It's always, you look at it as soon as it changes, you assess control, no matter if it's protective, substantive, whatever. If
you're saying it might change, and I still might conclude that it doesn't grant control.
Yes.
Okay, that's a simpler way of constructing it. I agree. All right. Pardon me?
John has a slide.
John?
Sorry, just to clarify, it's not just a change in the right, it's a change in facts and circumstances that may cause you to reassess the right.
Yeah. No, it's a change in whatever.
Just on that point, causally, it's usually the change in circumstances that have led to a change in whether exercisable or not. So it's, you know, I think that's typically the order, and that's the way it was designed to be written. Was something's changed, which has caused what rights, they were rights were there mainly for protective purposes, those rights have now going to perhaps a combination of something else could be controlled.
Okay. My sense of the committee is the message is pretty clear. Let's see if we can handle this one offline. So we'll circulate revised decision to all of you for your comments. Thank you, April.